In this week's Environmental Almanac, Rob Cantor explains the importance of prairie fires.
In the weeks to come, if you take advantage of the warmer days to visit local natural areas, you're likely to encounter patches of land blackened by fire. These are places where you expect to see tall grass prairie, but where, for the moment, there's nothing to block your view of a robin on the ground 50 yards away. What you'll be seeing is evidence of land managers using the most powerful tool at their disposal, fire. I've heard people wonder aloud whether it's necessary to do all of this burning, whether it wouldn't be better to just leave nature alone. The short answer to that question is no. Not if our aim is to preserve or reconstruct landscapes that resemble the tall grass prairie as it existed in central Illinois at the time of European colonization. That's because without fire, prairie would have given way to forest here over the past 5,000 years. Prairie fires, which were set regularly by American Indians and sometimes caused by lightning, are estimated to have scoured any given bit of land here once every 1 to 5 years. Prairie fires usually moved quickly, so their heat didn't penetrate deep into the soil. Thus, they killed the saplings of encroaching trees, such as walnut, ash, and sugar maple, and favored instead the growth of herbaceous perennials, grasses and flowers that die back and store their energy below ground in winter. By removing thatch and speeding the return of nutrients to the soil in the form of ash, prairie fires enabled dormant seeds to germinate, and the spring and summer that followed one were marked by a profusion of flowers and reinvigorated forage. Similar effects are now achieved through the use of prescribed burns. In addition to thwarting the advance of local trees, prescribed burns also now perform the important service of knocking back invasive plants imported from other continents, chief among them bush honeysuckle and autumn olive. Without fire as a tool, the task of keeping such plants in check would be far more difficult than it already is. Most prescribed burns operate like one I participated in a couple of years back at Meadowbrook Park in Urbana. It was conducted by Park District personnel with the help of volunteers from Grand Prairie Friends and the East Central Illinois Master Naturalist Program. Some volunteers manned barricades to keep park users from wandering into the designated areas. The rest of the team divided into two burn crews. Working on opposite sides of the burn unit and beginning at the downwind end of it, one person from each crew used a kerosene drip torch to light fire along the mowed paths that served as breaks. Others, who were armed with backpack sprayers, flappers, and heavy rakes, then spread out along the lines to make sure no fire crossed them. By design, the fires on the sides of the burn unit moved slowly, since they were advancing into the wind. Not so the head fire that was created as the two burn crews converged along the upwind edge of the unit. It snapped and crackled briefly, then roared to life and swept back across the field, exactly according to plan. If you have the opportunity, keep an eye on blackened patches of prairie as the growing season progresses, and enjoy the tall grass prairie plant show made possible by fire.
To find out more about Environmental Almanac, to listen to it again, or to see lots of photos, follow the links at our website at will.illinois.edu. And you can read Environmental Almanac on Sundays in the News Gazette. The Environmental Almanac is a service of the University of Illinois School of Earth, Society, and Environment, where Rob Cantor teaches courses in environmental writing and issues.